maximum of just $250,000 on his ethics disclosures following a career in federal service, a figure that excludes certain government retirement accounts. By 2025, his net worth had grown to between $3 million to $9 million, the disclosure documents show. Interesting.
But not all cash.
I mean.
But not all cash.
Was that a denial?
But not all cash.
Oh, you're saying it's.
But not all cash.
Oh. I think I made out the word cash.
But not all cash.
I'm sure the podcast audience is loving this.
Cash, but yeah.
So Homan also was a consultant for a division of Geo Group called GeoCare, where he disclosed receiving more than $5,000 over 2 years before taking a government role. I would imagine it's a lot more than $5,000 if your net worth is now in the millions. And he also was involved in hiring this guy, David Venturella, who had worked at Geo Group to ICE, and now Geo Group is getting a bunch of. I'm just trying to be substantive.
Total coincidence.
Okay. I haven't seen a dollar from the campaign.
This is a total coincidence.
Tom Homan's doing it because I think he's the greatest president of my lifetime.
This is a perfect representation of the dichotomy of our government right now.
You're throwing aspersions around to me. It's just total coincidence.
Meatwad.
Tom Homan's doing it because I think he's the greatest president
of
my
life. Where is our money? Where is our $50,000 tax dollars?
I mean, you care a lot about $50,000, Sam. What about all the stuff you did wrong?
As someone who recently started paying taxes, I want to know.
Yeah.
White House also could have said, whatever my wife got, it wasn't in a paper bag, and it wasn't U.S. tax dollars. I mean, this is, like... It is the most obvious question in the world. Where is our U.S. $50,000 that we paid to Tom Homan to pretend that he was a subject of an FBI investigation?
Do you think he got paid a lot more than just $5,000 over 2 years from Geo Group? I'm going to guess a lot more.
It would have to be per minute.
Yeah, it would have to be to get him to those millions. And you will not be shocked to know that Geo Group is getting a ton of contracts to do basically concentration camps, internment camps, abuse torture camps for a bunch of immigrants in this country.
Alligator Alcatraz.
Yep.
When I was in high school, we had a police officer come into our class and tell us one of the things he told us was that for every ticket they issue, they estimate like 25 traffic violations. Per ticket. How many other bags of cash do you think Tom Homan?
Yep.
This is the first time I've ever taken a bag of cash in my entire life. It's just so coincidence that it happened to be from the FBI. Yeah.
I mean, the FBI is to salivate when they see guys connected to this incarceration complex because they're all going to take this money.
Well, it's what we said about the Tim Pool thing and the Dave Rubin Russian money thing, where it's like, it's just you must be used to taking these kinds of payments if you agree to it so quickly on like to basically to make millions and millions of dollars without really knowing who the backer is. It must
Homan's defense, I'm sure it is the first time he has received $50,000 in cash in a kava bag.
Yes.
Right. Generally, I'd like other type of like a little shopping bag or... I'm also very
bars of gold.
Wendy's.
Folks, in a moment we'll be playing that interview with Avi Shlaim that we did just moments ago. First, a couple words from our sponsors. If you're noticing some hair thinning, don't panic. Plan. Now is the time to be proactive about your hair health. Nutrafol Men targets root causes of thinning hair from within so you can keep and maintain the hair you've got and only bring out the hat on game days, as it were. years ago, we were approached by Nutrafol to advertise to them. Nobody in the office was a taker, but we still had like a bottle or two around, and a year or two later, I was like, you know what? I'm starting to feel like I might be thinning a little bit in my hair, not anywhere else in my body. And I started taking it, and it has been I've had great results. The big issue for me was it is a supplement. And there is no reported, at least in my experience and apparently in others, impact to sexual performance or other side effects. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand. It is trusted by over 1.5 million people. In just 3 to 6 months, go from a hat guy to a hair guy with visibly thicker, fuller hair and improved scalp coverage. Nutrafol's hair growth supplements are physician formulated. They use 100% drug-free ingredients. Their patented technology provides consistent, reliable results. Nutrafol is the first and only hair growth supplement to be NSF certified for sport. Testing against 290-plus athletic banned substances, toxicology reviews, ingredient testing, label verification, and annual manufacturing facility audits to ensure FDA requirements are met. Nutrafol Men is clinically tested to improve hair growth and quality, plus, like I say, men reported no impact to sexual performance. They test the final formulations. So it's not just ingredients. They literally test the final formulations. Building a hair growth routine is easy. You can order online. You don't need a prescription. Hats off to Great Hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our audience $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com/men. Enter the promo code TMR10. That's TMR10. Find out why Nutrafol is the leading hair growth supplement brand on the market. Nutrafol.com/men, spelled Nutrafol.com/men, promo code TMR10. That's Nutrafol.com/men, promo code TMR10. More information in the podcast and YouTube links or descriptions, I should say. Also, sponsoring the program today, the turnkey mechanism that allows us to sell our merchandise at shop.majorityreportradio.com. When we started the podcast, basically everything I had to do on my own. Well, Dorsey also actually helped quite a bit. Pasting together the equipment that I had stolen from Air America and soldering wires and whatnot. It was super overwhelming. I was always afraid to start a merch store. For years, people were like, sell merch. I'm like, no, it's going to be too much of a pain. I don't want to have to deal with any of this, accounting for it, lists and upkeep and whatnot. Shopify was the answer. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world. Households names like Magic Spoon to brands that are just getting started. Shopify has hundreds of ready-to-use templates to help you build an online store that matches your brand. So if you want something that's beautiful, edgy, minimalist, or like what we do, seemingly done in like, your garage, Shopify is there for you. Shopify is packed with AI tools to help you put together product descriptions, page headlines, even enhance your product photography. Best yet, Shopify helps you manage inventory, both in real life sales and online. You can sell on social media sites all across the board. If you're ready to sell, you're ready for Shopify. Turn your big business idea into a cha-ching with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial. Start selling today at Shopify.com/majority. Go to Shopify.com/majority, Shopify.com/majority for a little bit of this. All of that info will be in the podcast and YouTube description. Quick break, and when we come back, Avi Schleim, Emeritus Professor of International Relations at the University of Oxford, His most recent book, Genocide in Gaza, Israel's Long War on Palestine. We are back, Sam Seder, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program Avi Shlaim. He is the Emeritus Professor of International Relations at the University of Oxford. His most recent book of nine, if I'm counting correctly, is Genocide in Gaza, Israel's Long War on Palestine. Professor, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you.
Before we get to your most recent work, broadly speaking, can you give us a sense of the what we mean when we say Israel's new historians and all that's involved with those, I guess, the revision of Israeli history that I know. For myself, when I was raised, the history I was taught was different than, I think, what we've come to understand.
So the new history is a very small group of Israeli historians who published books in 1988 on the fourth anniversary of the birth of the State of Israel. And the original group included Benny Morris and Ilan Pape and myself. During the second Intifada, which started in 2000, Benny Morris has veered to from the extreme left to the extreme right, and he's changed his views. Ilan Pape and I remain on the left, and we remain critical of Israel's policy towards the Arabs. The debate between, we were collectively called the new historians or the revisionist Israeli historians, because we challenged many of the assumptions and premises of the old history of Israel. We challenge the Zionist narrative of the 1948 war and the establishment of the State of Israel. Between us, we mounted a frontal assault on all the myths that have come to surround the birth of Israel and the first Arab-Israeli war. Benny Morris, his book was called The Birth of a Palestinian Refugee Problem, 1947 to 1949. And the Zionist narrative said that the UN voted for the partition of Palestine into two states in 1947, a Jewish state and an Arab state. The Arabs rejected the partition resolution. The Jews accepted it. The Arabs went to war. And in the course of this war, the Palestinians left Palestine. In fact, there were 750,000 Palestinians who became refugees. And the old history says they left of their own free will or on orders from above. And Benny Morris demonstrated in detail using Israeli documents that Israel was largely responsible for the birth of the Palestinian refugee problem. And Ilan Pappe has written a book about it called The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. Ilan Pappe also wrote another book called Britain and the Arab-Israeli Conflict, 1948 to 1951. The Zionist narrative claimed that towards the end of the British Mandate in Palestine, Britain rejected partition, rejected a Jewish state, and encouraged and armed its Arab allies to invade Palestine on expiry of the mandate to strangle the Jewish state at birth. And Ilan Pappe wrote a PhD thesis in 1984 in St. Anthony's College, Oxford, and I was the external examiner of his PhD thesis. And in that thesis, all the ideas of the new history are present in one form or another. But the main thesis is that there is a case against Britain as the mandate approached its inglorious end. It's not that it tried to prevent the birth of a Jewish state, but rather that it worked behind the scenes to prevent the birth of a Palestinian state. My own book was called Collusion Across the Jordan, King Abdullah, the Zionist Movement, and the Partition of Palestine. And there I challenge two Zionist notions. One that was that in 1948, Israel faced a monolithic Arab coalition united behind the aim of genocide, of throwing the Jews into the sea. I showed that the Arab coalition was very divided, and one member of this coalition, King Abdullah of Transjordan, was in cahoots with the Zionists to divide Palestine between themselves at the expense of the Palestinians. And this is what happened. And finally, I challenged the myth that at the end, after the guns fell silent, Israel's leaders strove with all their heart and all their mind to achieve peace with the Arabs, but there was no one to talk to on the Arab side. And I demonstrate, using Israeli documents, that there were pragmatic Arab leaders ready to negotiate and did negotiate, but it was Israel which was intransigent, and it was Israel which was largely responsible for the perpetuation of the conflict until today.
I want to get to the implications of that, but first let me also ask you, in terms of your own personal history, I literally just had this argument at my Yom Kippur breakfast. I was told that that Israel consisted in 1948 of Arab Jews who were kicked out of the various Arab countries in that region, and that's who established Israel. And I tried to explain, I think the sequencing is wrong. But your particular story, having been born and raised for the first, I believe it was 5 years of your life in Baghdad, and your subsequent understanding of why you and the vast majority of Iraqi Jews moved to Israel. Tell us that story.
It's a really interesting story. And my research, main research interest is the Arab-Israeli conflict. And I've always known, and I've written a number of books in which the Palestinians appear as the main victim of Zionism. But a few years ago, I started working on an autobiography, which was published 2 years ago under the heading three words, Memoirs of an Arab Jew. And it goes up to when I was 18. And then there was a long epilogue about the evolution of my views about Israel-Palestine until today. And the three worlds of the title are Baghdad, where I lived up to the age of five, Israel from 5 to 15, and London, where I went to school from 15 to 18. And in the course of writing this book, I realized that there was another victim of the Zionist movement, and that's the Jews of the Arab lands, like my family and myself. And the Zionists have a theory of the double exodus about 1948. They claim that the Palestinians, refugees, left of their own accord, and Israel was not responsible, and there was 750,000 of them. But there was rampant endemic anti-Semitism in the Arab world, and that forced 850,000 Jews to go to Israel, that they were driven out. So there was a double exodus, if you wish, an exchange of population, and Israel is not guilty of anything, whereas my research demonstrated that it wasn't anti-Semitism that, first of all, that there was a long history of Muslim-Jewish coexistence, and secondly, that most of the Jews of Iraq, and there were 135,000, had deep roots in the country and wanted to stay. But the establishment of the State of Israel made it very difficult for them to stay because it generated a wave of hostility and also persecution by the government of the Jews. So it's the Zionist movement which was responsible for driving the Jews from the Arab lands to Israel. And in the specific case of Iraq, in 1950-51, five bombs exploded in Jewish premises, and that precipitated the exodus. 125,000 Jews left Iraq and ended up in Israel. And I found evidence that the Mossad was behind three out of the five bombs. They used local Jewish Zionist activists to plant the bombs in order to frighten Jews and precipitate the exodus to Israel. So this is a very controversial argument. There have been rumors to that effect since 1948, but now I have found actual evidence, written evidence as well as oral evidence, that Israel was involved in uprooting the Jews of Iraq. Now, individual experiences have varied, but the community as a whole, the experience was like a tree being uprooted from the roots.
And
this phenomenon has been described as cruel Zionism. This is just one example of a pattern of false flag operations by Israel. That's cruel Zionism.
And would these tactics that you describe, that you have uncovered through your work, does that fit into many of the British colonial tactics that you write about in the way that the Zionist project was implemented? Because obviously the Balfour Declaration looms large over all of this, and what the British intentions were with the state of Palestine as well. Can you speak a little bit about that history and colonial tactics being continued through the Zionist project?
That's a very important issue as the background to the conflict. To put it succinctly, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict was made in Britain. And the Balfour Declaration of 1917 was the original sin, because in 1917, the Jews were 10% of the population, the Palestinians were 90% of the population, the Jews only owned 2% of the land, 2%. And yet Britain allocated national rights to the Jews by supporting a national home for the Jews in Palestine and denied national rights to the Arab majority. So it was a classic colonial document that disregarded the rights and aspirations of the majority of the people. It was Britain, it was the Balfour Declaration, which enabled the tiny Zionist movement to embark on the systematic takeover of the whole of Palestine. And it is this process that continues to this day. Now Israel is in control of 100% of Palestine. Yeah, in 1936, an Arab revolt broke out in Palestine, and it was the British army which suppressed the revolt with the utmost brutality. And the cornerstone of the British mandate in Palestine was that there must be no democracy, there must be no elections until the Jews became a majority. And this, the Jews only became a majority in 1948 as the result of the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. So Britain has a lot to answer for. And Britain was a colonial power. And the Zionist movement was a settler colonial movement. The state of Israel is a settler colonial state. And Noam Chomsky wrote that settler colonialism is the most extreme and vicious form of imperialism. And for the last century, the Palestinians have been at the receiving end of Zionist settler colonialism on the one hand, and Western imperialism on the other hand, first under Britain and subsequently under America. So I would conclude by saying that the war in Gaza, the genocide in Gaza, is the direct result of the Balfour Declaration, and that Zionism would never have been able to achieve what it's achieved, and the Israel would not, never be able to get away literally with murder and with genocide had it not been for the support of the imperial powers, of the Western powers. And today, when I look at on the second anniversary of the war in Gaza, I see that Britain and America are not just complicit in Israel's war crimes, they are active partners in committing these crimes against the Palestinian people.
Has the how linear has been the Zionist disposition towards whatever the end game they had anticipated being or continued to anticipate being? I guess a unified Israeli control over the land from the river to the sea, for lack of a better explanation. How linear has that trajectory been since the founding of Israel? Has there ever been a time where that has that agenda has moved in a different direction, or has it been linear, more or less, in that respect?
The trajectory has been linear, not just since Israel was created, but before Israel was created, when the Zionist movement emerged, because the Zionist aim, the Zionist ambition from the beginning was to create a Jewish state in as large an area of Palestine as possible, with as few Arabs within its borders as possible. So from the beginning, Israel has been an expansionist country, and from the beginning, land grabbing and expanding territory has been a motto of Zionism. 1967 was a turning point, because for the first time Israel had something very substantial to offer the Arabs in return for peace. It could trade land for peace, but no government, either Likud or Labour, agreed to a Palestinian state on terms that would be acceptable to the most moderate Palestinian leader. And after the June 1967, Israel immediately started building settlements in Gaza and on the West Bank. There was always talk about a two-state solution, and it's now become fashionable to say that the two-state solution is dead. And Netanyahu and his party and his coalition repeat every day adamantly that they would never accept an independent Palestinian state. So I would say that the trajectory since 1967 also has been towards expansion, towards greater Israel. But that's not to deny that there are differences of opinion between Labour and Likud. Labour was prepared for the partition of Palestine and an independent Palestinian state, though its terms weren't good enough for the Palestinians, whereas the Likud denies any Palestinian rights anywhere in historic Palestine. And the policy guidelines of the present government are very explicit. They say, quote, the Jewish people have an exclusive right to self-determination in the land of Israel. The land of Israel means not just Israel proper, Israel within its pre-67 borders. It includes the West Bank, which nationalist Israelis call Judea and Samaria. And the agenda of the present government is, and it's happening in reality, the agenda of the government is the ethnic cleansing of the West Bank, the depopulating and reconquest and an Israeli control over the Gaza Strip. And all this is, and for some of the extremists in the government, the explicit agenda is the formal annexation of the West Bank. So the agenda today, whatever it might have been in the past, the agenda is that of ethnic cleansing and greater Israel.
Has there ever been, to build off of some of what Sam asked about if this has always been linear, has there ever been a moment of true democracy for the Palestinians since the Zionist project came about and was undertaken? I've seen you refer to the Palestinian Authority as an Israeli subcontractor in the West Bank, for example. I guess my question is, has there ever been a true moment of independent self-governance where the Palestinians had true representation in some of these negotiations?
After Israel was established, there were 150,000 Arabs who remained within the borders of the State of Israel, and they were given the right to vote. And Israel was always very proud of being a democracy, an island of democracy in a sea of authoritarianism. And it is true that the Arabs did have the vote, and there was procedural democracy. There were parties, there were elections, there was Arab representation in the Knesset. But at the same time, from 1949 until 1966, the Arabs in Israel were under military rule with all sorts of restrictions. And there was, although they had the vote, there was discrimination against them at every level. They were second-class citizens and a raft of legislation which discriminated against them. So I'm prepared to concede that until 1967, Israel had a procedural democracy. But since 1967, with Israeli control of the occupied territories, Israel in no sense can be described as a democracy. And a couple of years ago, there was a report by the Israeli Human Rights organization, B'Tselem, which called Israel an apartheid state and a Jewish supremacist state, because all its previous reports had focused on violations of human rights inside Israel proper and discrimination against Israeli Arabs. But it's the last report looked at the situation between the river and the sea, and it concluded that this is apartheid or ethnocracy. It's a space in which one ethnic group, the Jews, dominated the other ethnic group, the Arabs. Now, you mentioned the Palestinian Authority. Well, it's in no sense an independent body which represents the wishes of the Palestinian people. The last election was in 2006, and Hamas won that election. So the Palestinian Authority lacks legitimacy. It's incompetent, it's corrupt, and it does nothing to protect the people under its rule. 40% of its budget goes towards security, but that's not Palestinian security, it's Israeli security. That's why I said that the Palestinian Authority is a subcontractor for Israeli security on the West Bank.
Professor, I know you've got to go in a moment. So the final question, your most recent book is Genocide in Gaza. I'm curious as to at what point over the course of the conflict now, which has lasted for 2 years, at what point do you feel that this has crossed the threshold of genocide? And where were we before that, I guess? Before that threshold was crossed.
It took me some time to conclude that what Israel is doing in Gaza is genocide, because genocide is a very, very serious charge, and it seemed to me almost perverse to accuse the Jewish people of committing genocide of Arabs, because the Jews had been the historic victims of Nazi genocide. And in my memoirs, I wrote, and it was a very critical book about Zionism, I wrote, "For all its sins, Israel has not been guilty of genocide." It was a gradual process that led me to the conclusion that Israel is guilty of genocide. And the clincher for me was the stopping of humanitarian aid from reaching the civilian population in Gaza. It's the use of starvation as a weapon of war, which is a clear indication of genocide. But another reason that led to this conclusion is the 1948 Convention for the Prevention and Punishment of Genocide. And it gives a clear definition. Genocide is the intent to destroy in whole or in part an ethnic or religious or racial group. And there are two aspects of this: the intent to commit genocide, and then the practical actions on the ground. And Israel is guilty of both. In this last book of mine, Genocide in Gaza, there are 6 pages of quotes from Israeli leaders, from the president and the prime minister down, which are clearly genocidal statements. So there is no doubt about the rhetoric. But secondly, Israel's actions on the ground also amount to genocide. The complete destruction of Gaza, destroying 80% of the housing and civilian infrastructure. The forcible displacement of civilians, which is a war crime. And for the last 2 years, Israel has been committing this war crime on a daily basis. Some people have been told to move 10 times or more. And when these people obey the Israeli orders to evacuate, they're often bombed from the air and in the areas that the IDF defines as safe zones. So there is no safe areas left in Gaza. And Israel has killed, by the last count, over 66,000 people. It's killed 20,000 children. It's made many children orphans. So this is genocide, which is live streamed on our screens every day. That's what is unusual about the Israeli genocide in Gaza. First, that it's openly declared that the aim is to make Gaza completely uninhabitable, to wipe Gaza off the map. And secondly, that it is live-streamed.
Avi Shlaim, Emeritus Professor of International Relations at the University of Oxford. Your most recent book, Genocide in Gaza, Israel's Long War on Palestine. We will link to that at majority.fm and in our podcast and YouTube descriptions. Thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it, and all of the work that you have done over these many decades now. Really, thank you.
Thank you as well.
Thanks.
Goodbye.
So much.
All right, folks, we're going to head into the fun half now. We had two IAMs that I think are worth mentioning during that. Labour Churchill says Britain's involvement in the Zionist project started within months of deciding to convert the Royal Navy from coal to oil.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And Midwest Ranch says, if you enjoyed this interview with Avi Shlaim, could not recommend 100 Years War on Palestine by Rashid Khalidi more. We've had Khalidi on, I think, twice.
I'm rereading that right now. It's in my backpack.
And Joe Biden was reading it last year.
Oh, my God. That photo op. I forgot.
Oh, God.
But go back. It. What are the dates that we had Khalidi on? We interviewed him, I think, twice in the past couple of years.
March 24th, 2024.
March 24th, 2024, yes. And maybe one subsequent, maybe this year early?
Rashid Khalidi, I don't know if we mentioned this on the show, has left Colombia in basically kind of in protest of their repression of free expression when it comes to the issue of Palestine. So, yeah.
As he called it, Vichy on the Hudson.
Vichy?
Vichy, sorry. Right.
Folks, just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. And when you do, not only do you get to hear the rare opportunity for me to correct someone else's pronunciation, you also get to help this show survive and thrive. And you get the free show, free of commercials, and you can IM us during the fun half. Also, justcoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, hot chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Great mix of coffees there. Great co-op in Madison, Wisconsin. Justcoffee.coop. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. You will get 10% off. Matt.
Yeah, as to my pronunciation of Vichy, all I have to say is this.
Global infidada.
Intifada.
Tonight, Justin Chen, a union president representing federal workers and also an environmental engineer at the EPA, on to talk about the shutdown and also a story about a Green Beret who is sort of built a mythology around him, being a sort of manosphere influencer. That is all tonight at, that's by Michael Sierra Arevalo. Tonight, 7 o'clock Eastern, where 50,000 other people have subscribed to Left Reckoning because they like what we offer on a weekly basis. So if you want to help us get to 100,000, which I'll start plugging
charge
in a little bit, you can subscribe at Left Reckoning on YouTube.
Carly Chirk says, my Max Left hat has gotten so many comments, I didn't realize how many majority reporters are in New Orleans with me. I even met a guy named Bob who said he wrote the AM Quick. Oh, wow, you saw Bob. Oh, shoot, I can't remember. Bob Hitt, who he works for. I don't know if I want to. He works for the Labor Department. He's like nabbing bad guys now. But yes, Bob used to work on the AM Quickie. Very nice guy. You can get a Max Left hat and then meet all sorts of new people in your town. Go to shop.majorityreportradio.com. Also, don't forget, AM Quickie. Bob used to write for it. Now it's Whitney and Corey, and they're doing a great job. Corey's been here since the beginning. AMQuickie.com. Free email. Three times a week. Do you want to upgrade? Help support the email? You can do that. But three emails per week. News of the day. AMQuickie.com. Now time for the fun half.
3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt!
Who?
Fun.
What is up, everyone?
Fun.
Nomi Key.
You did it!
Fun.
Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon.
Fun. Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women's...
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But, dude, you want to smoke this... 7A?
Yes.
Me? You're safe?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello? Is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports.
We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go for a
walk. Libertarians.
They're so stupid, though.
Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say.
857-210-35-501.
One half.
3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion.
Sold. It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this.
Poop. Call it satire. Sam goes, satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt.
Hey, buddy, we see you.
All right, folks. Folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled,
wow,
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock. We're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.
We are back.
We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Cedar, Emma Viglin, Fun Half, Majority Report, Newsday Tuesday. In the news is, of course, Andrew Cuomo.
Mm-hmm.
He is the former disgraced governor of New York.
Disgraced former governor.
Yes, I misplaced those adjectives.
Yes, and you also have to say disgrace Andrew Cuomo every time. That's his new first name.
And well, I am in it to win it.
Disgrace does, because he's not formally disgraced. He's currently disgraced.
Yes.
Maybe permanently disgraced. And former governor. And also the loser in the Democratic primary.
Mm-hmm.
Now an independent. Hoping to gain some ground on Zohran Mamdani now that Eric Adams has dropped out of the race. Sad that Curtis Sliwa has said, we've had socialist mayors before, we'll survive, says Sliwa. But this is fascinating. Stephanie Ruhle, when Stephanie Ruhle stumps you with a question about donors, you know you have a problem. Stephanie Ruhle, not a populist. Listen, you can be whatever you want. I just remember her from being upset during the 2020 primary when Bernie Sanders said, we've got to work for Main Street, not Park Avenue, or something to that effect. And she took real issue with that because she has friends on Park Avenue. But despite that fact, despite being a class colleague of Andrew Cuomo's, she still was able to stump him with a very basic question.
Your opponent, Zohran Mamdani, believes that Trump is helping you, right? Trump has called Mamdani 100% communist lunatic. And Mamdani says Trump is clearing the path for you, and if elected, you will clear the path for his agenda. What do you say to that?
Let's go back to the word delusional. There is no governor in the United States of America, no elected official, who fought more with Donald Trump than I did. None.
You share a lot of his same donors right now. There are a lot of New Yorkers who are very excited about your campaign, who are also very excited about Donald Trump. Don't tell me that's not true.
Are there New Yorkers who gave money to me and gave money to Donald Trump? Of course. Of course.
Why is that an of course?
Well, why not? If you are a New Yorker, you know Donald Trump, you know me. Many of them would give money to Donald Trump and give money to me. and money.
Why? What are you and Donald Trump?
Pause it for 1 second. I just want you to like. This is, first of all, this guy is so effing lazy. The idea that, like, they never sat around and said, like, hey, what if you ever get questioned on why you have the same donor? And let's be clear. She's not talking about somebody who gave $27 exactly. from Staten Island to both Donald Trump and Andrew Cuomo. And Cuomo doesn't even have an answer for that, which is a very easy answer. Look, I appeal to a broad swath of New Yorkers, and that's one of my appeals, is that I can reach Donald Trump voters. But he knows in his head that she's not talking about. He can't even pivot to that.
Right.
He knows that she's talking about, like, the billionaires.
Bill Ackman, Ken Langone. I mean, the wife of Carol Lauder, the wife of cosmetics heir Ron Lauder, who tried to unseat to elect Lee Zeldin in 2022.
And it's amazing because he's so guilty in his own mind. He can't even make the obvious, like, politician pivot.
Right.
He's caught dead. He's caught dead to rights.
And he knows he's on NBC.
Never contemplated how he would answer this question.
Right.
And so he's like, you know, we're both from New York. What?
And he'd rather also, I would guess, be talking about this than what has been reported over and over that they are collaborating and on the phone with one another. Like, she didn't even get to that part yet.
Go back a little bit, because this is really both a testament to how guilty he knows he is about this, that he is helping the same people that Donald Trump helps.
Same cookie jar.
How guilty he is and how utterly lazy he has been in this campaign. Like, it's one thing to, like, I don't need to. Look, I'm not doing the walk around the city. I'll go to a couple of interviews. But I'm also not going to prepare for it.
Right.
I mean, will riff my way out of it.
It's almost like he's entitled.
Who gave money to me and gave money to Donald Trump? Of course. Of course.
Why is that an of course?
Well, why not? If you are a New Yorker, you know Donald Trump, you know me. Many of them would give money to Donald Trump and give money to me. Oh. And money.
Why? What do you and Donald sense. Trump share in common?
Sex pests.
We're New Yorkers. They know me. Florida. They know him.
Yeah, but let's just stay on this. And I don't want to take too much more of your time because I'm surprised by this. You think that something about Donald Trump makes someone give Donald Trump a check and Andrew Cuomo a check. What is that thing that the two of you both share?
I think that people who know him and people who know me. I think
what are those things?
The personal knowledge. He lived here. I live here.
Fawcett, this is just amazing. He can't even pivot. In his mind, he knows that she's talking about somebody who literally hands him a huge check.
Yeah.
And he can't even make it as if it was, like, just people who send in donations online. Like, he doesn't. The average voter is so far removed from his mind that he can't even lie about them. And it doesn't even occur to him. There is an easy answer. Like, hey, I appeal to the guy who, you know, does landscaping in Staten Island. And, you know, Donald Trump, that's one of my advantages. No, he knows she's talking about the millionaires and billionaires. And
the Hamptons fundraisers.
He can't even contemplate anything else.
Also, the question should then follow up be, okay, Zoran Mamdani is also a New Yorker.
He's literally the only one who isn't a resident of New York City, really.
Yeah, right, because Andrew Cuomo's crashing at his daughter's and Trump doesn't want to step back in New York.
Personal knowledge.
Right, so...
Personal knowledge. So
the idea that people are cutting you millions and millions of dollars in checks because you both have lived in the city of Manhattan at one time.
You got personal knowledge.
City of New York is laughable.
I represented Bibi Netanyahu. Why wouldn't they?
Nothing more New York than that.
Come on.
I mean, people who know me. I think there
what are those things?
The personal knowledge. He lived here. I live here. You may be a friend of Donald Trump. You may know me. You may contribute to him. You may contribute to me.
But are
there's
there...
no similarity. As a matter of fact, there is no one who had no two people have had a more hostile relationship than myself and Mr. Trump. Mm. No one had a more hostile relationship as governor and as president. And Mr. Trump's dream would be Mr. Mamdani. for two reasons. First, he'd run around the country with a little picture of Mr. Mamdani and say, look at the Democrats. They just elected this commie. First job as mayor of New York. Wants to defund the police, legalize prostitution, legalize shoplifting.
This whole first job thing from a guy who's in the business that his father was in. Like,
yeah. I mean, also, the harping on this, like, legalized prostitution, decriminalizing sex work, if you were to ask random people if that were, like, I'm sorry.
It's not even relevant because he's not running on that.
But it's a good thing. It's also, even controversial. And when we're talking about a race that is centered around the cost of living and also is about, for the first time, a bunch of progressive voters being able to express their outrage about the genocide in Gaza and finally have a representative who represents them, including a plurality to a majority of Jewish voters, like, the issue of decriminalizing sex work, that's what he has to hang his hat on here. And the fact that Trump might use him and wave around a little picture of him, he should. Like, Zohran is an energizing force in the party right now. And, like, this dinosaur is making it abundantly clear that he is not the guy.
Let's also be clear. Donald Trump is lying every day in office. Like, there is nothing he's not going to be able to say. He's not going to say that Andrew Cuomo is a commie. Well, because we know that the president, he's a straight shooter.
Commie Cuomo.
This is just so ridiculous. He's just running from the fact that he couldn't even answer this layup of a question. Good.
He's everything that's wrong with the Democratic Party. That's why you need me. Literally, in the midterms, I believe you will lose seats if Mamdani is mayor. And you
see the swing Democrats
in New York, in the surrounding suburbs, distancing themselves from Mamdani.
Okay. So now it's not about New Yorkers at all. It's not about the people that live in the city. He is trying to appeal to wealthy donors again. He's slipping into that mode. Because it has nothing to do with New York City. It has to do with the suburbs and the midterms. Then who are you talking to there? It's not about improving people's lives materially, a rent freeze, free bus program, expanded kind of social services and childcare. It's about the midterms based on what Andrew Cuomo says.
Are candidates like Andrew Cuomo looking like they're getting a lot of momentum heading into the midterms? Or is it more candidates like Zohran Mamdani?
Yeah.
Governor's race, the Democratic candidate distancing. So, number one, he would be political candy for them in the midterm. Number two, it allows Donald Trump to come in, and he himself has already said this, I'm going to take over New York for the good of the people of New York, not with the National Guard. I have to come in and I have to take over because this kid can't protect New Yorkers.
But is that about redemption for
me? Where I can trust Cuomo.
Yes, I know that he's protecting all of the women in New York. Just holding on to them for me.
Hands-on approach.
But yes.
Very hands-on. Both hands, palms on. He's now saying in that response, though, he's implying that Trump would be wanting to protect New Yorkers. Did you hear that?
Yes.
Like, no, but like,
he'd use it as an opportunity to say he'd come in.
What is the justification that Donald Trump has in going to Portland or Chicago or anywhere else? Like, this is all just absurd. The idea that, like, well, Donald Trump's going to take advantage. Like, the dude does not say a single word about New York City voters.
But he says that Trump's going to have to come in because this kid doesn't know how to protect New Yorkers, where he is once again betraying that ideologically he is on Trump's side about needing, like, this tough-on-crime approach.
That's what Trump's going to say to the world to justify his coming in.
I don't know. Go back. I mean, I thought that—okay.
No, he's trying to do Trump's voice there, but—
I would love the opportunity because Zohran's such a crazy commie.
Yes.
The country will be okay with
as opposed to the seven other cities that I have invaded. He got caught with his pants down and didn't even remember, like, sometimes I take a pee. Like, that's, he had no answer for it.
I know. It's amazing.
Do you want to keep going with him on The View addressing his sexual harassment?
Sure. Let's do that. Just a reminder, $60 million, is that what it is, of our tax dollars that we have paid into New York State went to defend him from over a dozen women who had sexual assault claims against him or sexual harassment claims, some combination. He used that defense money to defend him, our tax dollars, so that he could make money to defend Netanyahu from the International Criminal Court.
Yeah.
But here he is on The View.
Governor, you resigned from the governor's office in 2021 amid a rash of sexual harassment allegations. And you left office apologizing to those women while always denying the most serious accusations. But you've taken a more combative stance lately. You say you regret having resigned, that you're a victim of cancel culture, that the allegations from 13 different women were all politically motivated and threatened to sue one of your accusers for defamation. Now, you were not criminally charged, but investigators in the DOJ have found the claims credible. So what do you say to voters who have a hard time looking past this?
Yeah, it's a good question. When the report was issued, I said I believed it was politically motivated, and it was. I didn't even know the allegations at that time, right? It was done in a report. I didn't even know who the individuals were. We then spent 5 years. That report went to five district attorneys all over the state.
First of all, you do have to acknowledge that if you have harassed or assaulted dozens upon dozens of women over the course of decades, it would be difficult to know which ones decided to tell the authorities about it.
I'll have to consult my records.
Exactly. I mean, to be fair to him, no one could remember the number of people that he probably was sexually harassing in some form or another. And there's no way for him to know which ones and ended up reporting him.
He keeps saying this is politically motivated by the Biden administration. The Biden DOJ was coming at you as a Democrat because he resigned in 2021 and the DOJ concluded that investigation in 2024. So
also,
the partisanship is non-existent here. You can't just say that.
It came from a lot of people who worked for him.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, and I got news for you. They knew they were not going to be appointed governor in the event that he has to resign in disgrace.
Those were Kathy Hochul plants.
Yeah, they're all, yes, on Team Hochul.
I can't think of somebody who's documented, like, whose
one
behavior.
One was a state trooper, for God's sake.
Yes, I can't. I mean, Lindsay Boiling was came out and was saying and The View should invite me on to tell my side of the story, and they should.
Yes.
They should, as one of, like, the most vocal accusers of Andrew Cuomo. But yeah, I mean, it's just like incredible to me that he's trying to say this is partisan. And there's no politician I can think of besides maybe Donald Trump where it's been more well documented that he's just a piece of shit. Like in every interaction to everybody, a bully, a bad guy, a creep to women. Everybody knows this. I've heard just like people who interacted with him. I know somebody that interacted with him at a fundraiser and was like, he was super creepy to my wife. I mean, these are stories you hear all across New York City and New York State.
It was an open secret before it came out for years.
He's learned a lot, as you'll hear.
When the report was issued, I said I believed it was politically motivated, and it was. I didn't even know the allegations at that time, right?
Oh.
It was done in a report. I didn't even know who the individuals were. We then spent 5 years. That report went to five district attorneys all over the state. No one found anything. It was then civilly litigated in court, the individual actions for 5 years. That came to nothing. I was dropped from the cases. So nothing came from those allegations. It was a very painful period for me and for my family.
Pause it for a second.
I have three.
You know what's amazing? You have these over a dozen women. They file these charges. Why would they continue to pursue them after he quits the governorship?
If it's politically motivated. Good point.
This is really, this is some serious, like, Mossad level stuff.
This is swamp.
I would think it was Mossad if Cuomo himself was not actually probably working for the Mossad in trying to protect them
from
human rights violations at the international
court. By the way, Mossad, I don't even know what that is. Anyway, I'm Barry Weiss. Is he about to say he has daughters? Yeah. I'm going to guess.
Oh, yes.
Oh, because you ejaculated and then it turned out that they were girls. You can, like, sexually harass anybody you want.
I got a license.
You got tails three times on the coin flip, and that means that you're not a misogynist.
My point is, in mentioning that I have daughters, is I can name at least two women that I come in contact with and have not harassed.
Yeah, father of daughters has never committed any sort of sexual misconduct.
Well,
from those allegations, it was a very painful period for me and for my family. I have three young daughters.
Okay.
30, 30, 28, not that young anymore. But it was a very painful experience for my family.
Find out that I was such a shit.
I did say if I offended anyone in any way, I didn't mean it. And I learned a lesson, a painful lesson.
Yeah, if, for instance, per one of Lindsay Boylan's accusation, he said that I would try to mount you too after a dog went up on her leg. Well, if I offended you with that, it's just because I'm Italiano.
If that's offensive, I'm sorry. I just want to say for those of you in the office that I have said that to, if that was problematic in any way, I'm sorry. I had no idea.
I had no idea those honking your ass.
Okay.
Dozens of AIDS.
Lesson learned. Okay, move on to the next one.
Also, you can't say I learned a lesson when just spending 2 minutes denying you ever did anything wrong.
I learned a lesson that women are all vultures and they are coming to get you under every circumstance. I learned that lesson.
Yeah, Anna Roush. This is just, you know, from his Wikipedia. In early March 2021, a third person, Anna Roush, a member of the Obama administration, later served on Joe Biden's presidential campaign, said that when they were speaking at a wedding reception, Cuomo put a hand on her back, that she removed it, and that he placed her hands on her cheeks and asked if he could kiss her. Look, I'm sorry if I offended.
Okay, all right. Okay, lesson learned. Second lesson. I've learned many. This has been a very good learning experience.
If I offended anyone in any way, I didn't mean it.
Sexually.
And I learned a lesson, a painful lesson, which is to be much more cautious about everything you say, any joke, any comment. I won't kiss a person on the cheek unless they initiate a kiss. So it taught me a lesson just to be super cautious, because there is a sensitivity that has evolved.
Bro.
That is real.
Uptight
if people
bitches.
Feel it, it's true.
This is, I'll tell you, that's what's sort of like inescapable. There's a sensitivity that has evolved as opposed to society no longer, well, I should say, society is not as vicious towards women who report this, or society has matured to the point where we realize sexism is not legitimate. Instead, from his perspective, like, all of a sudden, women are sensitive about this.
Ooh.
Used to be we could go in there and say a nice yams, and everybody would be like, oh, thank you. It just so happened they were your secretary. And they would, but now the women are sensitive, and so lesson learned.
On March,
it's their fault. That's my point. It's their fault.
It's their fault.
Maybe if they didn't grow the sensitivity, everything would be fine.
I didn't do anything, but it's their fault.
March 11, 2021, the Times Union of Albany reported that Brittany Camiso said Cuomo called her to his mansion, reached under her blouse, and fondled her.
Okay. Now, if I do that in 2002, everybody is happy. But instead, people grew sensitive.
And I've adjusted to that now.
And now I've adjusted. I do not put my hand up the skirt of people who work for me unless they initiate it. That is what I've also learned.
Oh, the blouse is off limits now. Okay.
Okay, I guess we're sensitive.
I missed the memo.
I did not keep up with my subscription to what we're sensitive about now. Unbelievable. This guy has no shame.
I mean, and saying it
genuinely
on a show with a bunch of women as they sit here and have to listen to that guy.
It's so funny that they went after Mom Donnie as the rich kid.
Oh, I forgot about this one.
It's just this list, like, Nepo babies just grabbing asses, running the laziest campaign. I've never seen so many exhibited personality traits of a rich kid in one person.
The unarmed state trooper, you remember that? Cuomo met the state trooper in November 2017 and lobbied to hire her as part of his security detail, despite her not satisfying the requirements for the post. She was indeed hired, and Cuomo later inappropriately touched her stomach and back.
Lesson learned.
And made comments.
Back in the 90s, your state troopers were not sensitive to having them touched.
If you didn't want to be touched, maybe you shouldn't be a woman state trooper. When did we start letting that happen?
It's a chain of command.
Why do you call yourself a trooper if you're not being a trooper? Okay, so lesson learned.
You don't have you're a little too sensitive to be serving in the state police.
Doesn't sound like you're a trooper.
Are you
after
up for
all.
The job?
Okay.
Hey, Seth made some good points about the feminization of our troops and police force.
It really is amazing that nobody on The View said, excuse me. Things got more sensitive, or
I mean, they were more respectful of that like reaction than they were to when they were harassing Zoran Mamdani about things he's never said about Israel Palestine.
Well, at least we got the answer to what him and Trump have in common.
Oh,
yeah, there we go.
Basically everything. Yeah. I mean, he's blue Trump. If anybody's blue Trump, it's Andrew Cuomo.
Excuse me, he what?
Let's speaking of Donald Trump. He got some news the other day that really surprised him about Ghislaine Maxwell. You'll recall that Ghislaine Maxwell, who was Jeffrey Epstein's accomplice in a sex trafficking ring, she, for some reason, got against prison of bureau criteria and procedures, moved to a much more cush prison that she was in after meeting with the number two at the DOJ, who interviewed her about what she knew about Epstein and Donald Trump. And by number two at the DOJ, I mean the guy who, as of January 7th of this year, was Donald Trump's defense attorney and just then shifted into being the number two at the DOJ. And here is Donald Trump. Watch the surprise on his face. He hasn't thought about this, incidentally, in years.
Wow.
Ghislaine Maxwell, he hadn't thought about any of this. Now, it's true, the White House fervently lobbied against any disclosure from the House regarding Epstein, to the point where Johnson dismissed all of the House members for the summer when it looked like he was going to be forced to bring a bill to the floor to release the Epstein files, has now not sat the winning congresswoman-elect,
Grijalva, daughter of the late Raul Grijalva
from Arizona,
for 2 weeks has it been now?
Yeah, she's in Congress and they're not, she can't get into her office because they're not giving her her keys because they're so
well,
eager.
Well, they don't want her to be able to bring the discharge
petition.
She's
the 218th vote. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that as a separate matter because there's, if Johnson can do this with just over the Epstein files, he could also do this theoretically with the new Congress coming in after 2026. But here's Donald Trump getting such a surprise update on Ghislaine Maxwell. He hadn't thought about her in years. What? Who is she still alive? How do you pronounce her
last
name?
Remind me who that is.
Maxwell? What is it? Caxwell? Matt? Okay.
Go. Did I wish her well?
President, say it.
The Supreme Court is back and yeah. They rejected today an appeal by Ghislaine Maxwell to overturn her conviction. That means her only chance of getting out of prison is a pardon from you. Is that something you're...
Who are we talking about?
Ghislaine Maxwell.
Ghislaine Maxwell.
You know, I haven't heard the name in so long. I can say this, that I'd have to take a look at it. I would have to take a look. Did they reject that?
She wanted to appeal her conviction.
And what happened?
They said that they were not going to hear her appeal.
I see. Well, I'll take a look at it. I will speak to the DOJ. I wouldn't consider it or not consider it. I don't know anything about it, so I will speak to the DOJ.
Why would she be a candidate for clemency, sir?
I don't know. I mean, I'd have to speak to the DOJ. I'll look at it. I have a lot of people have asked me for pardons. I call him Puff Daddy has asked me for a pardon.
But she was convicted of child sex trafficking.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to take a look at it. I'd have to ask... DJ. Oh,
I didn't know
they rejected it. I didn't know she was even asking for it, frankly.
I had no idea. I had no idea that any... What? She's still alive? Well, I didn't know that. Did anybody else know that? I mean,
one answer you could give is no.
Yeah.
Well, that would be... I need to look at it.
I would have to know what you're talking about before I say no.
I have a lot of people who ask me for pardons, and
from what I remember about her, it might be a borderline decision, actually.
Could someone ask him, do you follow the news as, like, the president of the United States? Do you read...
Are you still talking about Jeffrey Epstein?
The front page headline news of, like, any newspaper?
I think
it's a bit of step yet, Reed.
Is the dementia that far along?
Didn't see this on Hannity last night. Are you sure it's Maxwell? Are you sure it's not Max Bell? Max Kell? Okay.
This guy's been talked about for years.
Is that the coffee magnate?
What? Coffee? Well, who are you talking about? I have no idea.
She was the best part of waking up.
That might be
anyway, the
ballroom
is coming along nicely, not that you asked.
Also...
That's his least convincing lie.
Yeah.
Ever.
It's really bad.
Yeah.
It's like a 12-year-old.
No, yeah. I haven't even thought about any of this. Not even when Howard Lutnick got interviewed the other day and started talking a little bit out of turn. This is clip number 13. Howard Lutnick is asked by Miranda Devine, did you know anything about Jeffrey Epstein? And he's like, oh, I live next door to him.
Everything I know.
Next door. And
Lutnick is like an actual rich guy who has the arrogance of one. So sometimes he forgets that he's supposed to keep some things close to the vest because he's just loving the attention.
Yeah, go ahead.
Jeffrey Epstein was your neighbor. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about him. East 71st Street. He was your neighbor for 10 years. How well did you know him?
All right. So we are in number 11 and he lives in number 9.
Listen, I'm going to spare you his like going through, because this is a classic. I know this type of guy. He loves to tell any story where he's part of the news.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes on this long story about how he went over there and he was creepy. And I turned to my wife and he takes him a half an hour to tell the story. And we never went back. And he had a massage table in the middle of his like dining room. And we're like, we're not dealing with this. And then, so Lutnick tells the story and he's feeling his oats. Like he's finally getting like he's in his zone where he gets to talk about like being part of like history. And then he starts to reveal a little more than he should, considering someone relatively close to him
was
Donald Trump
reportedly
sort of implicated.
Yeah, Epstein's best friend for many years is what the claim is.
Right. So it's in New York City. So he invites us in. We have coffee.
Keep going forward because it takes him a long time.
The yarn is still spinning.
Yeah, keep going.
Of the room.
Ooh.
And candles all around and stuff.
He's still talking about the massage table now. Yeah, right there. Okay, right here.
Every day. And then he gets weirdly close to me.
Ooh.
And he says, and the right kind of massage.
Ooh.
Now, my wife is standing here.
I'm sorry, I talked over it. Go back a second.
No, he's still telling the story about how he was creepy and they decided never to go see him again. So just go forward just a little bit because this is where he starts to talk about why there was so many other people got caught up with him.
Takes to get from his house to my house. My wife and I decided that I will never be in the room with that disgusting person ever again.
Really?
So I was never in the room with him socially, for business, or for even philanthropy. If that guy was there, I wasn't going because he's gross.
So
I look back at it as a gift.
Yes.
He gave me a gift.
Yes.
Of a voice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's my story. A one and absolutely done.
Right. So, I mean, that's an incredible story that you can pick up that he was a pervert.
It's gross. The guy's gross.
Right.
With my wife. He's gross. The guy's gross. This was not, the deep nuance of Howard Lutnick. This guy's gross.
Right. So how come Bill Gates and all these other people could hang around him and not see what you saw?
Not you.
Other people.
Can you pause it?
Who do you think the other people are that she's referring to? Bill Gates and these other people. Who famously is in the news was hanging around with Jeffrey Epstein? How come they couldn't tell when you yourself just said anybody who was sending it could be aware that this guy was creepy.
Lutnick. Oh, yes.
Lutnick at this point, still, this guy loves to talk and is so full of himself. He doesn't realize, holy shit.
Yep.
I just said Donald Trump absolutely knew that he was a creep.
And she's flattering him by saying how that's why she's good. I saw that on her profile. She works at the New York Post and has worked at Fox News. The amount of time that this journalist has probably spent flattering the egos of old white men.
Yes.
She has it down to a science. So she says here to get him to reveal too much. You didn't, Bill Gates, this very famous wealthy man, didn't see what you saw, and then this creates it. I love manipulation.
These other people could hang around him and not see what you saw. Or did they see it and ignore it?
No, they participated.
Right.
That's what his MO was, get a massage. And what happened in that massage room, I assume, was on video. This guy was the greatest blackmailer ever. Blackmail. People. That's how he had money. So,
what happened to those videos?
Can you pause it
now?
The Trump.
Can you believe it? Can you believe that he's done? It's as if somebody dropped him out of a spaceship, and he knew nothing of what's been going on for the past 6 months.
The Trump administration is trying to claim that Epstein did not traffic the girls to anyone. That's their claim. Basically, to try to say Ghislaine Maxwell.
What's the blackmail?
Then that he just completely undercut it because he said they participated, which is the trafficking.
Of course. Yes. And incidentally, we call clips every day. This interview was from a week or so ago. The only person that is being sent out from the administration to talk about the economy is no longer Howard Lutnick.
Yeah.
It is only Kevin Hassett.
Yeah.
Who's just going around because they have buried this guy. You're not going to hear from him. He is in literally a walk-in refrigerator with Tom Homan right now because of what he just said.
Stephen Miller's wearing his tongue as a necklace.
His MO was, get a massage. And what happened in that massage room, I assume, was on video. This guy was the greatest blackmailer ever. Blackmailed people. That's how he had money. So
So what happened to those videos? Why is there now such a dearth of information when, you know, Donald Trump's people are running the FBI and the DOJ?
I assume way back when they traded those videos in exchange for him getting that 18-month sentence, which allowed him to have
no realization
visits and be out of jail. I mean, he's a serial sex offender. How could he get 18 months and be able to go to his office during the day and have visitors and stuff? It must have been a trade. So my assumption, I have no knowledge, but my assumption is there was a trade for the videos because there were people on those videos.
Can you pause it for a second? Trump, I'm about sorry. Oh, I want to hear that. But you can see also how he doesn't see himself even as a part of the Trump administration, almost to a degree, because of how she asked the question. Like, they're there to cash in. Lutnick's sons are doing business with the Trumps. They're all there just to make money. So he forgot he's the Commerce Secretary.
Now's the time where I exit the administration.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, I mean, this is either just complete, like disassociation from himself. Like, how do you say this when you know what's going on there, unless you're like, I think it's time for me to go.
Like, this is how Kash Patel was talking last year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But my assumption is there was a trade for the videos because there were people on those videos.
And have you talked to Donald Trump about this and shared your theory?
No, I mean, he knows the story.
Right.
My story.
He was there.
You know, I was one and done with the guy. Yeah. He knows that story, but that's it.
He would have been interested in that story.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's a story. It's just a one and done. That guy.
There it is.
That's where he realized.
That's the moment he's like, wait a second. Are we videotaping this? I'm sorry. I got. you know what? Actually, is this live?
Can we retake that?
Okay, let's do another cut. I got a better story about a
nothing ever happened
in the dark woods.
A diamond dealer. I got a better story about a diamond dealer. Yeah. Let me tell you that story.
Let's get this moment where he sticks his tongue out just clean here.
But that's it.
He would have been interested in that story.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's a story. It's just a one and done. That guy. Ugh.
And does Trump...
Dude, I keep going. What the... I just can't believe this guy just walked into this. It's the moment he realizes, oh boy.
Just a story.
How do I wipe the last 4 minutes of conversation?
I'm trying to spit it out of my mouth now.
It's been so long since somebody was interested in anything I had to say.
I've honestly spent the past 9 months kissing ass of a total moron, so I got it carried away.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's a story. It's just a one and done. That guy. Ugh.
And did Trump feel the same way about him?
I don't know. I don't speak to him about these kind of...
No.
These are just distractions.
I just spent 4 minutes, 5 minutes talking about a distraction. We don't need to.
He was the greatest blackmailer ever.
Oh,
that's
my
just
God.
A distraction.
God.
This is a sort of relevant from the Sheldon Whitehouse interrogation of Bondi earlier, if we just want to play this.
Yeah, is this about Epstein?
Yeah, it's about
Nice.
Epstein.
Let me ask you something else. There's been public reporting that Jeffrey Epstein showed people photos of President Trump with half-naked young women. Do you know if the FBI found those photographs in their search of Jeffrey Epstein's safe or premises or otherwise? Have you seen any such thing?
You know, Senator Whitehouse, you sit here and make salacious remarks, once again trying to slander President Trump left and right, when you're the one who was taking money from one of Epstein's closest confidants, I believe, I could be wrong, correct me, Reid Hoffman, who was with Jeffrey Epstein on multiple occasions. And the senator sitting right next to you tried to block the flight logs from being released. Yet you're grilling me on President Trump and some photograph with Epstein?
Come evidence. On.
The question is, did the FBI find those photographs that have been discussed publicly by a witness who claimed Jeffrey Epstein showed them to him? You don't know anything about that. Okay.
Ew. You know, the thing I like about White House, for the first of all, he's a former prosecutor.
Mm, helpful.
But also the accent. He's got that Brahmin New England thing going on, which lands it. And he doesn't get distracted by it. Nope.
I am so offended. I can't even honor that with a response.
I can maybe barely breathe.
Yeah, I couldn't even say no. That would put me at risk of perjury, sir. I'm so offended by what you said.
Yeah.
That's a distraction. It's a distraction.
We're going by donors here. John Paulson was in Epstein's Black Book, a mega donor to Donald Trump. And Les Wexner is a major Republican donor who gave Epstein his start and is likely the source, the beginning of the source of his mysterious wealth.
What was Pam Bondi doing in Florida with regards to Jeff Epstein?
Yeah.
Incidentally.
Yeah.
And we're getting so upset about people who deal with this guy, and she's like casting all sorts of aspersions.
That's a salacious thing to say, Matt.
I love
pictures. Gross. How can you say pictures?
The value of them being under oath cannot be overseen. I mean, because you see they're dodging in real time.
How dare you? You make all these allegations, sir, that are so upsetting to me that I can't even answer your straightforward questions.
Their dodges reveal so much more than we've ever had in terms of like information from behind the curtain.
Amazing.
And want to see when the House can get its hands on this kind of thing and when that discharge petition comes around.
Eventually, they're going to have to swear in, I think.
Bloomberg, July 2025. Bondi has been failing Epstein's victims for years. I would recommend people go check out that article.
How dare you say such a salacious... Salacious failing...
Just stare
into
the
Netflix,
camera.
Watch Netflix, read Hastings.
Yeah, shake your head.
This is the Senate, not TMZ. I am so disappointed in all of you. Ladies and gentlemen, the phone number is 646-257-3920. That is the phone number that will allow you to be part of the program. 646-257-3920. We take live calls. We do not screen those calls. 646-257-3920. If you are a conservative, if you are a Trump fan, if you are an Ezra Klein fan.
Who?
let's debate abundance, bros.
Yes.
Anybody. Call in. If you have salacious details, whomever, it's fine. First caller, 504 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Cliff from Louisiana.
Cliff from Louisiana. What is on your mind, Cliff?
I just want to say that I am disappointed because of the reaction to Bill Burr's having gone to the comedy festival. I would like to clarify that I understand why people are upset, but I feel as though this is mostly performative outrage, which... How do I say? I'm sorry. I'm freezing up a little bit.
No, all right. So wait a sec. So think that the response to the comedians going to Riyadh is overblown?
In large part, yes.
I mean, look, I don't think we have talked about it on the program. I don't think we care. I do think that, like, look. There's these guys wanted the money. They wanted the trip. You know, it would be interesting to go to Riyadh. It also is like a lot of times they feel like, you know, there's no, you know, implications to the choices they make. I think you could make an argument like this country we just blew up a boat full of random Venezuelans over the weekend, supposedly. We certainly blew up a couple of in the past.
We're helping commit genocide.
Yeah. I mean, so I think there's a legitimate argument, like, maybe I shouldn't go to the Kansas City Comedy Festival or whatever.
If I could quickly add, how can we be outraged at comedians for performing in Riyadh if we're not going to also cancel every other entertainment industry that is also participating in this greenwashing?
Well, look, I would also say
we can't give them money and then be mad at comedians for taking them money.
I don't know who's outraged by it, but I do think that, like,
other
you
comedians
also,
who didn't get booked.
Yeah, but I think, like,
Cross is righteous. I think.
Two things
lots
can
of
be
gamers listen, who will not stop playing Madden or FIFA after the acquisition.
Okay, listen. I think there's two things that can be true. One is that there is some type of like a justifiable grounds to say like it's hypocritical to single out people in this instance. And the other is, from the individual perspective, like they still gotta own it. Yeah. I mean, look, here's I mean, and it's I don't think it's that big of a deal, which is why we haven't really gone into it at all, or at least I haven't gone into it at all. But there are ads, just as an analogy, there are ads that we won't do on this show because we think they're gross, or we think the industry is gross, or whatever. Okay. Because it makes me feel dirty. Maybe there's other places that do those ads, and there's other places that don't do any ads whatsoever because it makes them feel dirty. And all along that spectrum, people have to be able to justify it to themselves and to their audience. And if their audience doesn't care, or some of them don't care, then they don't care.
Yeah.
Let me
just say that I do think that the hypocrisy of it is difficult for people to stomach. And I think it's more about the way that the art form, I guess, of like brand of like American stand-up comedy and what it's been weaponized to do over the past, say, 4 or 5 years, which has been specifically through podcast mediums to launder right-wing ideology, and what billionaires want to do on Joe Rogan, or this anti-trans agenda with that whole sphere. Like, it's the ultimate, I think, encapsulation of how corrupted and financialized parts of entertainment have become. And for that, well, what?
Entertainment's okay. Always been financialized, but the point is, these are also, a lot of these people have gone around and made their entire brand about free speech.
Free speech.
They commodified it for their marketing, and then they go take a huge bag from Saudi Arabia. I'm sorry, it's not honorable.
That's the problem.
Well, no, of course,
but in terms of the hypocrisy of, like, I don't like the Islamophobic undertones that you're probably referring to, where there's a lot of people who feel like they can now take some sort of morally justified stance, and a lot of those folks who are outraged about this have said nothing about the genocide in Palestine or
exactly
like what our government is doing. And so for the outrage that you're speaking about on the internet, the reaction to it, I get it. It's annoying. But I do think that
it's
they're
so unprincipled.
Yeah, but we can hold two things in our mind.
No, right, exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. It makes sense for us. Like, I can stand the outrage. What bothers me is all of these people that I know genuinely do not care. And if we were all on the same page, this would not be the pervasive problem that it is.
Well, I mean, look, maybe that's just a function of who you're hanging out with. Maybe that's hanging out with. But I mean, look. There are some things that are absolutely true. This is a comedy festival put on by a very oppressive regime. It's not the same as Kansas City doing it, with all due respect to Kansas City. I'm not gonna, but like, it's not, you know, it's not a private function that's going on there. They all signed contracts that show that they were perfectly willing to be censored, right, even if it wasn't their material, even if they didn't have to censor it. They were agreed to get paid all this money by a censorious government that is censoring them, even if it did not their standard stuff. That was the genesis of the real hypocrisy. That people were calling out, because a lot of these people basically rode this sort of wave of, I can't talk about trans people now. They literally never had to sign a document that said they couldn't talk about trans people.
And apparently that's
they were having to just be responsive to the audience.
Yep.
In this instance, they're literally getting paid under an explicit censorship thing, even if they didn't have any material that way, and they have no problem with it. Yep. That's what is the genesis of this.
I think Dave Chappelle's reporting was that he made some joke to that effect there in Riyadh. Like, I'm more free to say something here than I am at home. And that's insane to say because of...
To be fair, he was talking about making Charlie Kirk jokes, but still, the same problem.
Well, but
you're still whitewashing Saudi
exactly.
free speech.
Exactly. Like, I mean, you know, that's part of the problem.
He's
it's just that there
to
are
make
journalists...
those jokes there. Oh, I'm sorry.
You're definitely not freer to make jokes in Saudi Arabia than
you are. Yeah, I've seen people make Charlie Kirk jokes. People are making Kirk jokes here.
The second half of my sentence was that that they may be freer to make those jokes there, and that the audience will actually be receptive. Like, people like might actually find that funny.
That's you're using the word free in a very, very loose fashion. Okay? I mean, there is no guarantee that audiences, and there's no obligation for audiences to be receptive to jokes.
No,
even
of course,
even
of course,
and so
I'm saying that trans jokes are not funny to people who are intelligent, and therefore, to an audience, to a normal
but that's,
regular
that's the
audience,
point. Is these people said
don't land.
There are people in that cohort, comedians, who said that they were oppressed because they couldn't tell a trans joke without having some type of like critical backlash. And then they go and are willing to do a show with very explicit red lines. That's the problem. But I'll appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
It's really, I guess, ultimately more about that free speech thing. But we got so far afield from it that we'd forgotten that was really the primary thing.
And I do like, I think it's not, that's why we haven't covered it on this show. It's not, I think, super applicable, but I do appreciate comics like Cross. I think there is some need of sort of self-regulation in some of these things.
Yes. And Stavros said something, and Gianmarco.
Shane Gillis turned it down.
Shane Gillis.
He said no.
Tim Dillon was going to go, and then he made a joke about they're paying me enough to look away from the slavery. And then they
canceled it. It's pretty funny. I think Shane Gillis can afford to say no.
I think that whole flyer could afford to say no.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I mean,
it was a flyer of millionaires.
Yeah, yeah. I don't get that. I mean, some of the Bill Burr, I don't get it. I still think it's embarrassing for them, but I'm not like, you know, taken to the streets over it.
Calling from a 573 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey guys, this is Lucas calling from Missouri.
Lucas from Missouri.
What's from hell, really.
From where? From hell?
Okay. I wanted to just really quick share the story of Owen Ramsing. He's a local guy here in our community who was arrested last week upon reentering the country from his yearly trip to the Netherlands. He's been a citizen for over 40 years. And I just wanted to share some details about his confinement, if you can call it that, with ICE. I think his story sheds some light on.
He's been a citizen
a lot of other
for 40
stories.
Years?
Yes, his family, he was born, I believe he was born here. His parents are from the Netherlands. They immigrated back in the 80s. I think that's, again, I'm sorry if I'm misconstruing that detail of his story, but I know that he's been a citizen of this country for 40 years. Some of the details of his confinement, you know, he said on a phone call with his wife that he was in a 30 by 30 room with 45 other people with 20 chairs, no beds. He was recently transferred to El Paso in Texas, staying in tents. And again, this is information that he's sharing with his wife, not by some design, but through constant attention to action from his wife and members of our community to just get an answer. It took 2 days almost to get an answer of where he was even being held. Mm-hmm. And then when he got transferred to El Paso, again, just radio silence, nothing but phone call after phone call from his wife trying to get answers. They even offered him the, I'm sure you guys know about the $1,000, whatever, give up your green card for self-deportation policy, I think is what it is. They asked him multiple times, and pretty much the attorney of the family told him that, you know, if he takes that deal, he's never coming back to this mm-hmm. country.
So he was a permanent resident. He made, I don't think he was a citizen.
Yeah, I get it. My terminology is not great, and that's a problem. But I think, you know, you can kind of, you can probably read from between the lines, but I apologize to the listener.
All right, no worries. I just want to make sure that's
clear. So, I mean,
again,
that's a couple other
clear.
Things. I appreciate you clearing that up. And again, you know, I'm living in Missouri right now. So this is not like I'm living in a state where this kind of activity isn't promoted almost like on a daily basis by the people that I live by and live around. So it's not a story that gets talked about much, unfortunately. But, you know, we have a governor here who has authorized the National Guard to help ICE. This is the same governor who revoked our vote last November to enable his constituents to have rights as a worker when it comes to days off and paid leave, paid sick leave. He wrote that. So, you know, I feel personally a little powerless. It doesn't feel like somebody that serves any of his constituents, but again, not trying to turn this over to Kehoe. This is about Owen Ransing. And the last thing that I really want to share about his story, among a lot of the other details in it, is just the fact that the day that some of this was coming out and being reported on the local news, man, has the narrative just completely shifted. I can't even find the original article with just these details anymore. The only thing that pops up is how he had he was arrested in the early 2000s when he was 17 on possession of cocaine in Kansas or something like that. And then like 19 years ago, he had a possession of marijuana charge with like a really small amount here in Missouri. All of those cases have been dismissed and cleared, but it was nuts to me how quickly the narrative moved. And again, I'm in Missouri, so, but the narrative moved to, oh, well, he's just a criminal. This is exactly where they're going after. And
there is, and I appreciate the phone call, but this is across the board where there is a compulsion by the media to make things seem normal. And the way that story seems normal is if they say he's, you know, a dangerous criminal. But the reality is that 50% of the people, over 50% of the people that ICE is rolling up have committed no criminal offense. And they don't, there is a, like, a, the, part of it is they want to make themselves feel like it's not going to be, everything's going to be fine. Everything is going to be fine. Folks, don't worry. It'll all be fine. And that's why I think that they sort of downplay that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, they're also in the business of sucking up to power to a degree for access. And so they will, even if they're critical of the Trump administration, they'll still grant a lot of the framing, no matter how absurd.
All right, let's take one phone call, and then let's get to that number seven. Calling from a 443 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Ah, excellent, excellent. Sam, big-time fan, dear boy. This is Winston Churchill here.
Okay.
Do you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I have some very, very important information I would like to share with regards
be,
to you and
quick,
Nazis.
Because as you know, you're dead.
You, sir, are pronouncing Nazi correctly. I, on the other hand, sir, in the 1930s, through the Secret Service nonsense, learned that Hitler was deeply offended and irritated by any mispronunciation of Nazi. And at that point, sir, I called him a Navi until the day that he died. And I plead, sir, if you would be so kind, if the Majority Report and its listeners would start to call Nazis Navis, we would be a step closer. And if you would indulge one quick second thought, sir, I don't remember when America decided to stop shooting Nazis. And I say, sir, if you're walking in a street in America under a Nazi flag, and I have an AR-15, which I'm legally allowed to own, I should be able to shoot Nazis.
You mean Nazis? Appreciate the call. Nazis. Yeah, you've slipped up on your own edict. But nevertheless, appreciate the advice. But with that said, it's actually a good segue into this, where the idea of mocking these people is sometimes the most effective, because we have various different, I guess, mechanisms of resistance, some which are legal in terms of the courts, some which are political in terms of electoral politics or hoping that some of our lame political leaders will do stuff. Some of it is tactical on the streets. Some of it is you could be writing stuff, whatnot. But one of the things that really helps is ridicule, because you understand that when we talk about these people, we are talking about very, very small-minded, petty, angry individuals. And sometimes the slightest slight coming from the right
messenger
can really, really set some of these people off in a way that, listen, if 60 seconds of their day is spent not being a fascist, but rather being a little injured,
whiny little bitch,
then it's helpful to somebody. It's 60 seconds where they're not doing something horrible. And that's what the 60 seconds is. I give you Stephen Miller, shaven-headed Stephen Miller, with Laura Ingraham.
Stephen, AOC is you're her favorite target, apparently, on Instagram. Check this out.
He looks like he is angry about the fact that he's 4'10". And he looks like he is so mad that he is 4'10", that he's taking that anger out at...
Pause it.
Okay, so I have a little theory. You know how whenever he goes on Jesse Waters like talks about how he's sexually magnetic?
Or when his wife, when Katie goes on, he does that too.
That it's happened multiple times. Yeah. They're mocking him a little bit. Like, I think there's like he's too detestable even for Fox News producers.
Yeah.
That's
ironic,
my theory.
It's ironic.
The
yeah.
sexual matador, Stephen
Miller?
The fact
that they put up the fact that they played it for him to react is not something you would expect from the right-wing propaganda
with his
news
face
outlet.
On
yes,
camera.
Exactly. They did a reaction shot.
And look at he's got that fake smile, and then as he starts to hear her come in, things turn dark. Things turn dark. There he is. Am I off camera?
At any other population possible, like, laugh at them.
I wish I had a hoodie on. I mean, are we trying to play sorority sister as elected official? I don't know. I was at a sorority over the weekend over in Texas.
Like, he's having such fun. Go back. I want to watch his face again as she is mocking him, and they make him like respond to it. And the laughter is so fake after he's done with
this. Well, because maybe he doesn't know.
Seething.
Maybe he doesn't know that they put him up on split screen. He might just think that they go to the full, and that's when his face falls because he's actually reacting to it, not doing the fake laughter, right? That's got to be what it is.
At
yes.
any other population possible, like, laugh at them.
like, laugh at them. Laugh at them. I wish I had a hoodie on. I mean, are we trying to play sorority sister as elected official? I don't know. I was at a sorority over the weekend over in Texas. I felt like I was back at the sorority house, except they had more sense.
Good one.
Stephen, quick response.
Made perfect sense. Well, we knew that her brain didn't work. Now we know their eyes don't work. So the is a mess, right? What a train wreck.
Patel, go back. Look.
This is great.
Too. Sorry, I cracked myself up there.
This guy's so funny. Like, we knew their brains didn't work, and now we see their eyes don't work.
But he doesn't even stick the landing.
No, but the point is, it was inaccurate.
I'm not that short.
It was inaccurate.
A good one about the sweatshirt.
It was. I'm actually not 14. I'm not in any way. I could barely even hear what she's saying. But I'm not 4'10". Let me just. Is there any way? Can we get a ruler here? Just like, I don't care what she says, but I just want to show you I'm not 4'10".
No, quick response.
Well, we knew that her brain didn't work. Now we know their eyes
worked?
Don't work. So she is a
good
mess,
one, guys.
Right? What a train wreck. What a train wreck.
I think you should just get a great hoodie.
What a twain wreck.
He's
spasming.
He's went to baby talk.
Yeah, her brain didn't work. What a twain wreck.
Worked a twain wreck. I did work her brain don't work.
No, he's trying so hard to conceal his rage.
Oh,
and
he's doing baby talk.
The only time he's in front of a mic is when he's doing like Goebbels like cosplay and he's screaming about, you know, the enemy from within or whatever. So he is not comfortable.
The
in
lisp
this
is coming
situation.
Out.
It's good.
AOC, you're in big trouble. Wait till I get back to the White House.
It didn't work.
I will deploy forces you would not reckon with.
You're going to stick me in a locker again.
Brain don't work.
They're going to squish my lunch.
Brain don't work, don't go.
Fucking idiot.
Even a quick response.
Well, we knew that her brain didn't work. Now we know their eyes don't work. So she is a mess, right? What a train wreck. What a train wreck.
I think you should just wear a hoodie from now on and respond to her.
Yeah, say more about the hoodie.
It's
train wreck.
Thank you so much. Yeah, go ahead.
I think the important point is that...
You know when you're riffing and you got to be like, no, you do the riff. I'm done doing with the hoodie stuff. You do your thing.
It should be hoodie to hoodie.
Statement,
thank you so much. Yeah, go ahead.
I think the important point is that every time she's on TV... Republican approval ratings go up, Democrat approval ratings go down. That lady is a walking nightmare.
A walking nightmare.
Yeah, you said that four times.
Why does he talk like this?
God.
Walk a nightmare. He's a walking nightmare.
You know what? It's very possible she is his walking nightmare.
Yes. Yes. Can I just, I wanted to get this in at one point because I've been like looking, leafing through this book, Jean Guerrero. She wrote this a while ago, but it's on Stephen Miller. So his background, he's basically the president, so people should know a little bit more about him. He grew up in Santa Monica. His family had some financial hardship, and they had to move to a different area when he was 13 years old, a more heavily Hispanic area, a little bit lower income. It seems that he took that as a grave humiliation, and Guerrero interviews former classmates of his, including a friend that he dumped when he found out he was half Mexican in eighth grade, and also his interactions with specifically Latino women in his high school, where he was going after this like student group, the Chicano student movement of Aztlan. I'm not sure if I'm saying it correctly, but he would yell at them, speak only English. The girls spoke a hybrid of English and Spanish, Spanglish, blah, 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 seeing him. And they saw him as, quote, a bizarre and lonely guy, a sad white kid who was disturbed. One time she was chatting with her friends when Stephen came up to her and said, go back to your country. Vivanco stared him down. This is my country, she replied. She was born in Santa Monica. So it's specifically this female Latino group that bothered him so much that he would harass that Guerrero writes about in this. So I bring that up just to say that AOC is probably the most triggering person to him in the entire country.
And this is a guy who has some sensitivities. People may have forgotten this, but... 4 years ago, was it? 5 years ago, back before Stephen Miller.
6 years ago.
6 years ago, before he started to shave his hair, his head, he still had ideas.
Oh, my God.
This is back when he had decided one day to go on Face the Nation and spray paint hair on his head, and everybody mocked him mercilessly for
this. Do you think him and Rudy Giuliani shared the shoe polish?
I was going to say NBA fans know this as the Carlos Boozer.
And LeBron.
Oh, LeBron, although we don't talk about that as much.
This is also, was this Nora O'Donnell? What's the name of this woman?
Is that not Margaret?
Margaret Brennan?
Yeah, Margaret Brennan. She deserves a medal for not laughing at this.
God. This reveal is worth it.
We begin today with White House senior advisor Stephen Miller, who is the president's point person on policy. Good to have you here in studio.
It's completely sprayed on. You can see that shot. Oh my man. God. There has to be photos of this online.
Can we go back to the front shot again? Because it's even more apparent there.
Do we have video of
Ben? Oh my God.
It's amazing.
The Widow's Peak
The entire Widow's Peak is fake.
Put it back up.
Now, incidentally, for those of you, just leave this up here because I want to, ultimately, I think many people know my dream is to retire and do a DIY the YouTube channel. And so what you would do here is you take your blue tape and you put it right across the forehead.
Painter's tape?
Yeah, blue painter's tape. And you put it right across the forehead. And you make that peak. And then you just spray it on and make sure you put plastic over your face so you don't get any, like, oh.
That's Carl's.
Do you remember we did a live show at the Bell House and Benjamin came out with that sprayed on?
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Oh, so good.
But Stephen Miller has moved on. He no longer, he's decided I'm doing the full shave thing.
Yeah, he's
good
a follicular
choice.
Matador.
Yeah, own it. Same thing with short kings. I know AOC walked it back and was like, I've got no problem with it. It's just if you don't own it and you're super insecure about it like he is, it radiates.
Yeah, we didn't hear the last sentence of this Fox clip where he corrects his height.
Oh, let's go back.
Oh my God, no. I didn't even know that.
Are you serious?
Yeah, well, she sets him up, but he definitely takes it.
Let's go back and watch this. And I just want to say we cannot confirm the reports that Stephen Miller has confiscated Ron DeSantis's boots. I just want to make that clear.
Republican approval ratings go up, Democrat approval ratings go down. That lady is a walking nightmare.
You're about, I know you for 20 years, you're about 5'10", 5'10". 11". About 5'10", yes. So 4'10". Yes. I don't know what she can't say. All right, Stephen,
5'10".
It's just 5'10". I mean, it's not important. But it is 5'10".
I did cut you off to say it faster.
I mean, it's actually 5'10", but that's with my shoes off. With my shoes on. It doesn't matter.
It's so much funnier that it's not true. I mean, I think it's funnier that he's not even that short because he still got so insecure about it.
Little Stephen Miller.
Yep, little Stevie.
Yeah,
I'm 5'10". Without the hair, when I shave my hair, it's actually closer to 5'9".
They are like doing AOC's whole Senate bid for her, like all of the work by making her the main character of this. Because they do, we were talking about this a little before the show, they don't have a woman to get the Fox News audience all mad at it because Nancy Pelosi is no longer the leader of the Democrats. So they need the woman that the whole Fox News audience has this psychosexual obsession with, except for this closeted gay ones. They need to make her the main character. And if she's the main character, Democratic voters in New York State are like, yeah, she can replace Chuck Schumer. How about tomorrow?
Also, the idea that, like, is she juvenile? Is she wear a hoodie because she's making fun of your height? I don't know if you remember who is your president right now. You might remember him from Little Marco Rubio.
Yeah.
And In fact, all of this juvenile crap is a function of Donald Trump and his minions. But Laura Ingraham seems to have conveniently forgotten that.
Also, they forgot that they're supposed to be talking to working class people when they're like, a hoodie? What is she, trash?
What's she wearing? Wearing a suit at home.
Way to forget your base.
I mean, are they going to have Fetterman on again?
Yeah, exactly.
That is...
She's wearing a hoodie in her apartment. Like, what kind of exact job is that? Right now.
Reminds me of a sorority I was at once, like, or and just someone's house.
But they forgot that the
it
whole
reminds
right-wing...
me of a sorority that I pledged.
They forgot that, but they've been doing the right wing narrative about how sororities are great for.
It seems so ridiculous. Where is she from? A sorority? Someone didn't get into the good one. She didn't get into Theta Delta Phi or whatever. Oh my gosh. Let's see. Oh, you want to play this or you want to play?
I don't know. I mean, what do you guys want to do?
Let's see. Let's take a phone call, but then you guys figure out what we should do.
I mean,
we're almost there. Yeah. All right, let's take a phone call. Perhaps final call of the day, 917 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Is this me?
Yes, it is you.
Hey, I am calling from New York. My name is Carl.
Carl from
I'm
New York.
Calling about... Yes, I'm actually calling about Michigan politics, where I'm originally from, and where my sister and family still lives. Sister and father are very active DSA members.
Cool.
Very left, but we have a extremely lived out liberal Zionist uncle who has totally fallen for the Mallory McMorrow bit. And I'm so amazed because I did just a little bit of research, and I don't know why people aren't talking about this, but Mallory is married to a man named Ray Word, who she met working at Gawker, and he has, over the years, jumped around from, he was working for a place called Cruise, which is like AI autonomous driving. He was doing something similar at GM, and the same month that Mallory announced her bid, he also picked up a job working for Radiant Nuclear, a nuclear energy company that is funded by the Founders Fund, aka Peter Thiel, and Andreessen Horowitz. And they also just were awarded a conditional government contract. And, you know, my uncle, who is a very smart person, too smart for his own good, he's so, emboldened in his views, and you know, we've been yelling at him about Gaza for a year at this point, and he's professionally late, and you know, he now sees it as a genocide, and he pretends like he has no issue with a senator being married to somebody who has a serious conflict of interest representing the PR of a nuclear energy company. I'm not sure why it isn't discussed by anyone. Or am I being naive in thinking that there's something fishy going on there?
Well, no. I mean, one, I hear what you're saying about this connection. I don't know if it's necessarily, like, the worst thing. I mean, nuclear energy has promise as a way to transition away from fossil fuels. I get what
not if Teal's controlling it, though.
But I get what you're saying about Teal.
I'm not anti-nuclear. It's the fact that you know, Mallory's husband is working for a company that is funded by Peter Thiel indirectly.
Yeah,
And whose CEO is buddy buddy with Elon Musk. You know,
that's an issue. I mean, PR, like, I get what you're saying. I think the bigger problem.
He worked for Granholm before. He worked for John Kerry and for Granholm before he got into tech. So clearly,
her positions like, you don't need to look into this. It's not like her positions are good, but she has these weird connections. Her positions on whether it's Israel or healthcare suck. They're shitty liberal technocrat positions. Just because Stephen's in the race, she looks a little bit progressive. But there's a genuine candidate in the race, Abdul El Sayed, and he's the only genuine article, as far as I'm concerned. So that's really why we haven't focused into her bio, is because she stinks.
But here's the thing is, we need to find an excuse other than her empty Gaza stance, for, you know, delusional liberal Zionists like my uncle to, you know, detract from supporting her, right? And I think maybe a way to do that is to point out the fact that her husband could have a lot of sway over, you know,
yeah,
her decision-making.
Let me just say that, like, does your liberal Zionist uncle have a problem with Abdul al-Sayed being a Muslim?
You want to know what's, well, he'll never say that out loud.
Right.
But my,
so then there's no,
and my father, my, yeah, sister and my father both know Abdul and have worked with him personally on, you know, different events over the years, and are supporting him. And my uncle says, he has no real reason, right? He has no real explanation, you know, except for, he's horny for Mallory, you know. He's literally a 60-year-old.
Well, dude,
version.
I mean, but this is where it's like, I see what your argument is, but you're answering your own question. Unfortunately, your uncle has probably some bigoted views towards Muslim people, and I'm not sure you can logic your way out of that. What could change his mind is potentially if he's the front runner at a certain point. You see how people, yeah, winning and that momentum brings along folks who were skeptical. We've seen it with the Zohran Mamdani thing. People want to be a part of a winning campaign. And that's sometimes why, like, even just Democratic primary voters slip into supporting more centrist campaigns, because the propaganda of what's winnable has been so effective. I just think the time and energy behind Abdul al-Sayed's campaign is going to be more effective than any fact check that you can provide here or piece of information on that front.
I think also, I mean, yeah, just to add to that, like, you know, the notion of he's got a better chance, she becomes the spoiler.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm just also so shocked by how these phony politicians get buy-in from people. I guess I'm, as a 30-year-old, I've just come to realize in this past year specifically how fake and how prosthetic so many of the politics that a lot of people buy into are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's disappointing to see it in your own family.
Don't make me revise my Blame the Voters tour.
Well, it's also true that if you want to play politics on easy mode, you take the line on Israel that McMorrow has always taken, and the media will take care of a lot of the promoting you for on behalf of itself, whereas Syed is going to have to be entirely grassroots. But I think that's the era we're in right now, which is why Predict It has him moving ahead of McMorrow and Stevens today, where Stevens was leading it a couple weeks ago.
Appreciate the call.
Yeah, McMorrow put out. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Have a good one. Thank you.
Thanks.
I think there is sometimes like a something you're not going to be able to overcome by sort of rational.
Yes.
Yeah, I think if they need you to go into Peter Thiel invests in a company that gives you money, I just think they're probably not going to be persuaded by that either.
Yeah, and also, like, I mean, I do, Thiel, like, I feel like has investments in millions and millions, or maybe not hundreds of companies or whatever, but so it's just not that direct of a connection in terms of, like, something that's going to, I think, break through.
All right. Let's read a couple IMs and then let's get out of here. Stephen Miller's hairline. Please see my above statements on the real story of my hairline. Goose, Stephen Miller height was the third autocomplete option when I Google Stephen Miller.
Nice.
That's
a piece of work.
Great. That should actually be a project. That
he tiny style putty tat.
He really lost it. He really
started babbling.
Yeah.
The Sebadeh kid from Tahasa. The real question is, what country is Tom Homan going to be ambassador to? Sam's jaundiced eye. What a time to be alive. New Jersey mailman. So no back pay for federal workers. Does that include ICE? Because the longer the shutdown lasts, more ICE agents might suffer financially.
Nope.
In this strategy of resistance attacking the fascist bank accounts. This is only for federal employees who have been furloughed that they are going to try and withhold back pay. So if you are working without pay, ICE, military, I don't know, several hundred thousand other federal workers, you are not getting paid, but you will get the back pay. If you have been furloughed, you're supposed to get back pay, but they're now claiming they're not going to, as a way to essentially shoot the hostage, as it were. Uday and Kuse Lutnick, we got to say that we loved when Jeff would babysit us. The bestest leftist. Couldn't get a shofar for my Grammy Connie's 94th birthday. She was a lifelong Republican until Trump came into the picture and has shifted to the left in her 80s and 90s. Happy birthday, Grammy Connie. Jackie NBC, I have been through this exact line of questioning with the Nanaimo school board about 50,000 missing for secondary languages. There was never an answer, but the next year it was budgeted. Mm. All right, five more. Ebony, sure, ask Cuomo about donors. Can someone ask Adams about donors? Which is the best Turkish restaurant to find them? Sasha. I want to make a complaint for being silenced on the chat. Apparently really cool. This is he or she has approval over my opinions. Okay.
I just got the donor kebab joke.
Oh, I didn't get that. Dimitri Medvedev. Jennifer Welch. Jennifer Welch would have an assessment of Miller and Latinas. Matt said, incidentally, the cohort of the Majority Report staff saying it has increased. Okay. George McBay. Now we know her eyes don't work. I'm a 4'10 and a half. A half. Nicola. Matt is in his Michael phase as advertiser. Oh, and the left reckoning thing.
I don't think I'll ever achieve those heights.
Omega, Miller looks like an old man from Dracula Flow. Please, God, I can't unsee that. I love you all, but I hate you for showing me that abomination. Also, I have a point about Van Jones. What would he have said about people being racist to his kids in school with his Gaza baby jokes? And the final I am of the day, Tom Cotton's beard. 5'10 is a very 5'8 thing to say. Matt, Brian, Emma, great job today, folks. See you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught. See the truth in the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light's shining bright. I guess somewhere the choice is made. For the option where you don't get paid. For the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive. Between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking. But the meds are gonna kick.
whatever. Oh my gosh. Let's see. Oh, you want to play this, or you want to play?
I don't know. I mean, what do you guys want to do?
Let's take a phone call, but then you guys figure out what we should do.
I mean,
we're almost there. Yeah. All right, let's take a phone call. Perhaps final call of the day, 917 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Is this me?
Yes, it is you.
Hey, I am calling from New York. My name is Carl.
Carl
from
New York.
I'm actually calling about Michigan politics, where I'm originally from, and where my sister and family still lives. Sister and father are very active DSA members.
Cool.
Very left, but we have a extremely lived out liberal Zionist uncle who has totally fallen for the Mallory McMorrow bit. And I'm so amazed because I did just a little bit of research, and I don't know why people aren't talking about this, but Mallory is married to a man named Ray Word, who she met working at Gawker, and he has over the years jumped around from he was working for a place called Cruise, which is like AI autonomous driving. He was doing something similar at GM. And the same month that Mallory announced her bid, he also picked up a job working for Radiant Nuclear, a nuclear energy company that is funded by the Founders Fund, aka Peter Thiel, and Andreessen Horowitz. And they also just were awarded a conditional government contract. My uncle, who is a very smart person, too smart for his own good. He's so emboldened in his views. And, you know, we've been yelling at him about Gaza for a year at this point, and he's professionally late. And, you know, he now sees it as a genocide. And he pretends like he has no issue with a senator being married to somebody who has a serious conflict of interest representing the PR of a nuclear energy company. I'm not sure why it isn't discussed by anyone. Or am I being naive in thinking that there's something fishy going on there?
Well, no, I mean, one, I hear what you're saying about this connection. I don't know if it's necessarily like the worst thing. I mean, nuclear energy has promise as a way to transition away from fossil fuels.
If Thiel's controlling it, though.
But I get what you're saying about Thiel.
I'm not anti-nuclear. The fact that, you know, Mallory's husband is working for a company that is funded by Peter Thiel indirectly.
Yeah.
And whose CEO is buddy-buddy with Elon Musk.
That's an issue. I mean, PR, like, I get what you're saying. I think the bigger problem,
he worked for John Kerry and for Granholm before he got into tech, so clearly
her positions, like, you don't need to look into this. It's not like her positions are good, but she has these weird connections. Her positions on whether it's Israel or healthcare suck. They're shitty liberal technocrat positions. Just because Stephen's in the race, she looks a little bit progressive. But there's a genuine candidate in the race, Abdul El-Sayed, and he's the only genuine article, as far as I'm concerned. So that's really why we haven't focused into her bio, is because she stinks.
But here's the thing is, we need to find an excuse other than her empty Gaza stance for, you know, delusional liberal Zionists like my uncle to, you know, detract from supporting her, right? And I think maybe a way to do that is to point out the fact that her husband could have a lot of sway over, you know, her decision-making.
Let me just say that, like, does your liberal Zionist uncle have a problem with Abdul Al-Sayed being a Muslim?
You want to know what's, well, he'll never say that out loud.
Right.
But my
so then there's no
and my father, my yeah. sister and my father both know Abdul and have worked with him personally on, you know, different events over the years. And
and are supporting him. And my uncle says, he has no real reason, right? He has no real explanation, you know, except for he's horny for Mallory. You know, he's literally a 60-year-old
virgin.
Well, dude,
I mean, but this is where it's like, I see what your argument is, but you're answering your own question. Unfortunately, your uncle has probably some bigoted views towards Muslim people, and I'm not sure you can logic your way out of that. What could change his mind is potentially if he's the front runner at a certain point. You see how people winning and that momentum brings along folks who were skeptical. We've seen it with the Zoran Mamdani thing. People want to be a part of a winning campaign. And that's sometimes why, like, even just Democratic primary voters slip into supporting more centrist campaigns because the propaganda of what's winnable has been so effective. I just think the time and energy behind Abdul Al-Sayed's campaign is going to be more effective than any fact check that you can provide here or piece of information on that front.
I think also, just to add to that, like, you know, the notion of he's got a better chance, she becomes the spoiler.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm just also so shocked by how these phony politicians get buy-in from people. I guess I'm, as a 30-year-old, I've just come to realize in this past year specifically how fake and how prosthetic so many of the politics that a lot of people buy into are.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's disappointing to see it in your own family.
Don't make me revise my blame the voters tour.
Well, it's also true that if you want to play politics on easy mode, you take the line on Israel that McMorrow has always taken, and the media will take care of a lot of the promoting you for on behalf of itself, whereas Syed is going to have to be entirely grassroots. But I think that's the era we're in right now, which is why Predict It has him moving ahead of McMorrow and Stevens today, where Stevens was leading it a couple weeks ago.
Appreciate the call.
Yeah, McMorrow put out. Yeah. Okay. Have a good one. Thank you.
Thanks.
I think there is sometimes like a something you're not going to be able to overcome by sort of rational.
Yes.
Yeah, I think if they need you to go into Peter Thiel invests in a company that gives you money, I just think they're probably not going to be persuaded by that either.
Yeah, and also like, I mean, I feel like has investments in millions and millions, or maybe not hundreds of companies or whatever, but so it's just not that direct of a connection in terms of like something that's going to, I think, break through.
All right. Let's read a couple IMs and then let's get out of here. Stephen Miller's hairline. Please see my above statements on the real story of my hairline. Goose, Stephen Miller height was the third autocomplete option when I Google Stephen Miller.
Nice.
That's a piece of work. Great. That should actually be a project.
He thought he saw a putty tat.
He really lost it. He
started babbling.
Yeah.
The Sebadeh kid from Tahasa. The real question is, what country is Tom Homan going to be ambassador to? Sam's jaundiced eye. What a time to be alive. New Jersey mailman. So no back pay for federal workers. Does that include ICE? Because the longer this shutdown lasts, more ICE agents might suffer financially.
Nope.
In this strategy of resistance attacking the fascist bank accounts. This is only for federal employees who have been furloughed that they are going to try and withhold back pay. So if you are working without pay, ICE, military, I don't know, several hundred thousand other federal workers, you are not getting paid, but you will get the back pay. If you have been furloughed, you're supposed to get back pay, but they're now claiming they're not going to, as a way to essentially shoot the hostage, as it were. Uday and Kuse Lutnick, we got to say that we loved when Jeff would babysit us. The bestest leftist. Couldn't get a shofar for my Grammy Connie's 94th birthday. She was a lifelong Republican until Trump came into the picture and has shifted to the left in her 80s and 90s. Happy birthday, Grammy Connie. Jackie, NBC. I have been through this exact line of questioning with the Nanaimo School Board about 50,000 missing for secondary languages. There was never an answer, but the next year it was budgeted. Mm. All right, five more. Ebony. Sure, ask Cuomo about donors. Can someone ask Adams about donors? Which is the best Turkish restaurant to find them? Sasha, I want to make a complaint for being silenced on the chat. Apparently really cool. This is he or she has approval over my opinions. Okay.
I just got the donor kebab joke.
Oh, I didn't get that. Dmitry Medvedev. Jennifer Welch. Jennifer Welch would have an assessment of Miller and Latinas. Matt said, incidentally, the cohort of the Majority Report staff saying it has increased. Okay. George McBay. Now we know her eyes don't work. I'm a 4'10 and a half. A half. Nicola. Matt is in his Michael phase as advertiser. Oh, and the left reckoning thing.
I don't think I'll ever achieve those heights.
Omega. Miller looks like an old man from Dracula Flow. Please, God, I can't unsee that. I love you all, but I hate you for showing me that abomination. Also, I have a point about Van Jones. What would he have said about people being racist to his kids in school with his Gaza baby jokes? And the final I am of the day, Tom Cotton's beard. 5'10 is a very 5'8 thing to say. Matt, Brian, Emma, great job today, folks. See you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the lies, but finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice is made. For the option where you don't get paid. For the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive. Between the 101.